are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
Welcome to the Serious Growth Podcast, where the truth is told, hopefully. On today's show, we have Tim O'Keefe. Tim, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I keep telling people now at this age, for my age, I'm doing pretty good. You know, I don't know how in the hell I got the. I'm almost 65.
Wow, you look good, man.
Thank you. How about you? If you don't mind me asking,
I'm 55, close to 56.
Youngster.
I'm a youngster.
Youngster.
As I was telling an ex-pro football player a couple days ago, I said the 60s, the new 40, and in another year it'll be the new 30.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, that whatever you have to do to keep fooling ourselves, you know. But that, in all seriousness, you know, if it wasn't for this training and working out, it would be I'm convinced, you know, it would be a whole different ball game. Because I've seen it as a personal trainer now, I've actually witnessed this last 38 years. I have actually seen that with people that have come to me, and then I see it with my own self. And, you know, the truth of the matter is this: when you get older, it's not easy. It's not for the faint-hearted, and you have to deal with owies. You know, as an athlete, you deal with owies, and you just deal with them at an older age. It's just kind of the same but different. But I think there's no question in my mind that getting into the gym, no matter what, is part of the answer for, you know, keeping it all going.
Well, I think part of the deal is that in our 20s, you know, it's like you have nothing else to worry about.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get kids and you get a wife, you get a house, you got to go do a business or go to work or whatever it is. Yeah. And now it's more complicated. You know, things start stacking up, and hopefully within the work, there's passions and things that you can do to make it all worth it. And then, okay, where's the weightlifting or whatever your thing of working out is, you got to fit in. That's where I'm at right now is I've got to go join a gym. I got fired from my coaching job last September. So I was lifting at the school as part of training the kids. So it was kind of like that is my little way to make it so that I'm going every day, you know, and get extra bonus. So now it's like, okay, I got to get back and get going again. So I agree with you.
How long were you a coach?
I think this past year was 16 years as a volunteer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My business, has allowed me to do that. To give back. I had a coach long ago said, give back.
Yeah.
Go get your football in done. And I went to Pacific up near you guys. And then, you know, come back, get your schooling done, and then come back and give it back. And it kind of haunted me because I was really lucky as a football player to be blessed with really, really amazing men to mentor me. And so I've been, for whatever reason, interested in marketing and psychology and sales and all this. And that was my path. And then when my older son started playing football, he was playing flag. Now, as an ex-football player, you know, flag's not real football. Right. And so I'm watching this, and the poor kid's only in the sixth grade or fifth grade. And I'm having a little bit of a parental conniption that he's, oh, that's not how you do it, right? Yeah. So I thought that I would be able to go in, and at first I did it for my son, just like most coaches in the little kiddie leagues. And
yeah,
I realized really quickly that it was more than that. There's a lot of kids that single family homes, broken homes, because we were over in El Segundo, and which is by the airport in LAX. And we had the kids that I call the beach kids, and we had the kids that I call the inner city kids. And it was a neat little mix. It was a neat little mix of kids coming together, but each group had its own problems. You know, I had one guy, one dad who, God, I think he was paying three or four child supports to different
baby mamas.
Different moms.
Yeah.
And he's living at the beach. Living at the beach, making big enough bucks to do that.
Yeah.
And then you got the inner city kids, and that's, you know, their own problems. But so there's kids looking for mentorship, and that kind of touched my heart. And why I've been doing it for so many years.
Well, it's interesting because really the way I see it is that you and I are similar in that respect, because you're basically a personal trainer to those kids. I mean,
absolutely.
That's the same thing that we do. You know, I learned as a personal trainer that it was way more than just putting somebody through workouts. When people start saying things like, because I didn't realize it, you know, Tim, when I'm doing this personal training, I took certain things for granted. Like when people would say, you don't have any idea how you've impacted me, how you've changed the way I went, the path that I went down, you know? And it was just mind blowing to me when I heard that. And I tell you something, I was humbled by it. And I never forgot stuff like that.
Well, it sometimes you wonder, you know, when you think you're doing good stuff and you wonder, is it all worth it? Like, yeah. I said, the reason I just got fired. You would go, wow, it sounds like a pretty, you know, neat game plan. And then how do you fire a guy like that? Well, because I wanted to do it right.
Yeah.
And so then after what had happened to me, and I won't go into the gory details of how it all went down, but I was kind of doing a gut check going, what am I going to do? Am I going to coach again? I've been wrong, blah, 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 blah. And yeah, so yeah. You got to coach yourself, right? When you're in that situation, you got to, okay. And I went to my mentors. And by the way, it's my segue to say that I've always thought of you as one of my mentors going back to the 90s when I purchased your book, Big Beyond Belief.
Yeah.
And even when I'm coaching the kids, I've referenced that thing. I can't follow it exactly with the timing and stuff because I'm only given so much time. I only have so much resources there. But I took the concepts I learned from it and adjusted it to what I do there. But I've also adjusted it. I look at the stuff I learned from there and I've generalized it into other pieces of my life.
Yeah. Well, it crosses over. I appreciate you giving me that confidence. It really means something. But I think you're right about that. I think just weight training in itself, especially bodybuilding, or when you have that kind of a regimen that you need to follow, it's more, again, it's more than just lifting a bunch of weights. It, the longer that you stay with it, it like is life lessons that you're really learning in many ways, you know, to develop discipline. And that most people don't really understand that side of it, because
I think when I was playing way back in the day, and I played D1 football up at Pacific, and sadly they don't have football anymore.
Yeah.
But I always thought of it analogous to playing, right? You got one more rep. You got one more rep, right? You always got one more rep. Well, that's the same thing on the football field.
Yeah.
You always got one more rep, right? Yeah. And so what I try to do is when I'm with the kids, I'm trying to get them to recognize that it's the same thing, man. It's you can go one more. If you can't do one more rep, jump down on the ground and give me a push-up if we're doing chest or whatever. And it's the same thing. It's like, why in the hell is this any different? You're on the football field now.
Yeah.
You got more, and you always got more. So that's what I loved about weightlifting and strength training, and is getting them to realize that it's something that is analogous, but also stands on its own. Because, yeah, you know, I'm not teaching bodybuilding, I'm teaching strength and all that, right. But it's like, big deal. So, and hopefully, and I would always tell them, I go, this is lifelong. This is something that you could do when you're my age, that, you know, because you don't want to go out and do turkey bowls anymore at our age. And
right.
You don't want to go probably not playing basketball. And you know, everybody our age goes out and plays basketball, ends up hurting their Achilles.
Yeah, that's
true. You know, right? Right? Yeah. You know, I got 100 stories like that. And yeah. And so, you know, and I always, it's two things. I always say bodybuilding or swimming, you know, and that could take you for, you know, through the long term. So,
yeah. So when, how old age group do you work with? Is it high school level or college, or which age group are you focusing?
So I've been, like I said, I was really blessed as a player. Pete Carroll went to Pacific, right?
No, I didn't know that.
And yeah, I like to joke. I'm one of the few guys that actually was a player in the same room with Pete Carroll as a coach with Pete Carroll, which is kind of implying that I played for him. I didn't. I went to Pacific. I went to Pacific when he was there, but he was only there 2 weeks before he went. It was during the spring when I got there. And so it was like January or something. Yeah. And he took off for the Jets and he started his pro career. And then I've been in clinics and stuff and I've met him. I've been at SC. I had a buddy who coached up at SC when he was down here. And
yeah.
But that's my little claim to fame.
Yeah. It's a version of the truth.
It's a version. It's close. You said, let's tell the truth. So I'm kind of going.
Even if it's a version, it is the truth.
It is the truth. But Pacific, I like to tell people, if you look at the lineage, there's so many guys, if I go through the roster, that have coached, that I played with, or, you know, go up or down a couple years. These guys, most of the guys have coached either baby leagues or pro, or college or high school. So I started with my oldest son, the one that was playing flag, and I played him. I coached him 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And then I dropped all the way down to the babies. And I did flag, mm-hmm. And then took my youngest, who's 20 now, all the way up to the 8th grade. And we made magic. I get together with the coaches, and I had this wonderful staff, and we made magic. I mean, we taught, I'd like to think, the better lessons that sports can teach, mm-hmm. which is really why I was coaching. You know, in the beginning, it's like win, Robert. And then I got into the more enduring things that can last somebody forever.
Yeah.
And that's what I've tried to teach. And then Nick went in to high school, and he was kind of teetering between his own world and BMX biking. So I kind of backed off. I became a ghost. I was still involved in the league as an administrator over in El Segundo. And I was a ghost at the high school. And then his junior year, I kind of got permission from him to coach. I was overheard by him after a game, getting our butts kicked by the El Segundo boys that were used to be his teammates. And he overheard me and talking with my wife. And my wife was saying from day one, you need to coach at our area, you know, Torrance. Mm-hmm. So she brought me in, or I should say, we were talking about it and he overheard it and he goes, you thinking of coaching? And I'm like, oh God, yeah, is that okay? And he goes, you know, typical teenager,
yeah.
You know? And so that gave me kind of permission psychologically from him to go kind of get to know the coach. And I kind of schmoozed and did all that for a season and just to see if I want to be part of this. And so I saw a lot of problems within the program. And I thought, well, maybe I can make a change from within.
Yeah.
And so I coached, I got the blessing of coaching Nick his senior year in high school, which is kind of neat. And then he played a year in college. And then I'm like, well, I don't have a dog in the race anymore. So the coach offered me the freshman. And I was like, that's cool. You know, I could run my own program, which I'm used to.
Yeah.
And I could see what it's like not to have a kid that I'm always, you know, I was pretty good. I wasn't what they call a daddy baller, but you're always looking at your kid to make sure, you know, his bell gets rung. You care a little bit more. You don't want to admit it, but you care a little bit more. It's your son. And then that was that. That was just this past fall, was the second year of freshman.
Okay, so then I'm curious to know, what position did you play in college?
This is actually kind of a cool story because it's one of the great lessons that I've had in from sports that I could pull from. I played nose guard at Pacific, but I didn't start there. I got every freaking award a guy can get in high school, right? I'm going to UCLA, right? And UCLA never even sent me one of them fake letters that they're interested in. You remember those?
Those are the mass letters,
Yeah. You know, print out 10,000 of these and send them to every high school student. And but it feels good when you get it and all that stuff. So nothing even from, you know, my childhood dream, which was to go to UCLA. And Wooden was the reason I wanted to play football anyway at UCLA, believe it or not. So I go through high school. I get awards on offensive line and defensive line and playing the Shrine Game, blah, 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 all the crap. And where's what? Nobody's knocking. What the hell's going on, right?
Yeah.
And so you're, it's, it was almost like a cruel tease. And the guy that knocked was the guy from El Camino College. So I'm like, all right, I'll go to El Camino and get there. And according to the linebacker coach that's there. Oh, I'm sorry. So I switched to linebacker because I think because of my size, that's probably why I'm not getting looked at. You know, I'm only 6'1" on a good day. And so I go to linebacker and he swears to this day, cause I see him once in a while that I was going to start, but the head coach pulls me over to the offensive line right at the end of camp before the season starts, cause we have injuries. So I remember this, but I kind of pushed it out and I've got old buddies that told me, oh my God, you're miserable, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was great in the sense that that team broke passing records and it was a hell of a team. There was about 7, 8, 9 guys that ended up playing in the NFL off of a junior college team at one point.
That's significant for sure.
A significant number, right?
Yeah. I
think it's more than probably the Pacific, you know, if you were to try to compare it. But I go there, I do the season at offense, and I, you know, Saturday's the last game of the season. Monday, I'm knocking on Coach Riley's office. Hey, you remember you said if I did this, I can go back? And he's like, you know, and he goes, yeah, but we're stacked with linebackers. And I go, yeah, I know. And this is where I guess where I started learning how to sell. And I said, but we don't have any nose guards. In fact, the D line has kind of been emptied with the sophomores leaving. And he goes, oh, that's true. And he kind of thought it through and he agreed with it. Not to be doing this and going over old awards, but I ended up getting the MVP as a sophomore, as a nose guard. And there's never been a lineman, I find out from my old coach since up until 2 years ago that got MVP. So kind of cool. So that's where I started playing nose, and then we end up at Pacific, and that's where I finished.
When you're up at Pacific, you still play defense and nose guard?
Yes.
Okay. So the reason why I was asking that is when you're coaching now your kids, are you coaching that side of the football, like the defense and specifically nose or the defensive linemen? Or how did that
work? Great question. When I was at Knicks with his varsity team, I helped out at linebackers and I helped out at the O-line. But they had already established – I didn't even know if I was going to come back there because I was kind of like overkill with coaches. You know, they already have a linebacker coach. They already have an offensive coach. So I always joke I was a cheerleader for that for that senior year of his. But traditionally, like I've done for the freshmen the last 2 years, I run, you know, I'm way up here, you know, in culture building and all the team building and all this psychological stuff, which I'm really good at. And I go real micro and I am on the offense and defensive line.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you're mentioning that because your story sounds a little bit like my story. It was a big shock for me. I started athletics when I was 8 years old, 9 years old, playing Little League baseball. And that was just my thing, man. I mean, even at that age, I knew I wanted to be a professional athlete. That was it for me. And I was so into it. And I didn't really realize the hole in my life until that one day where it all came to an end.
Yes.
And that was in college ball. You know, it's for the average person, they might think, well, how in the hell can that actually feel like that or actually be? But it's a pretty big shock. I mean, I even understood with these pro athletes sometimes, like after they get out of the league, you know, they've been in something so structured for so long that they love. And then that one day it's like, well, shit, now what? You know?
What? I mean, and that's exactly what I went through at the end. That's what I say to people all the time. I got to the end and I'm like, I'm a football player. That's, you know, my identity is
everything
in that.
Yep,
and it. I've spent every, and I'd like to say that I was an academic and I paid attention to, you know, to all what I was supposed to, but I just got by so I could be in the weight room and so I could be, you know, getting faster and I could be, you know, getting better in the off season and play football. Yeah. And that's was my mentality.
Yeah.
And it was going to last forever until it didn't. And now right. What?
Yeah, and it becomes who you are. I mean, there's no question about that. And again, my point, how you and I were similar was, you know, once that happened, then I thought, okay, I came back to the family dairy because that's all I really knew what to do was go back to some roots.
Yes.
You know, and yet, Tim, I knew that's, in my heart of hearts, I knew that wasn't where I was supposed to be. I knew that. But I didn't know what else to do. And, you know, there's a long story behind my career too, because I think I left the sport of football too soon and I used injuries. I used a really bad injury I thought, well, maybe this is a sign for me to get out, which is bullshit. But that's just what I was thinking at that time. I mean, it all works out at the end of the day, but that's kind of where I ended up. I was on a family dairy. Boy, I was restless inside. It was awful. It's like a bear.
You're originally from up there?
Yeah. We have family dairies. My grandpa started a dairy like at that time, 50 years prior to that. And it was in my culture, Portuguese, it's supposed to be left down to the next generation. And I was the next generation that it was supposed to be left to. But I grew antsy. You know, I was on the dairy for about 4 years. And look, it was pretty stable. And at this point, I'm married. And then with some young kids, and I thought I need a release, and I just don't know what that needs to be. So I went and did some coaching. I thought, well, maybe, you know, doing the coaching thing would be something that would ease the pain, if you will. It was really, yes, really frustrating,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I realized that even though as an athlete, I love that. As a coach, I not so much. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I thought, no, I'm not. This is not going to be something I'm going to be wanting to do for very long, for whatever reason, you know.
Yeah.
And this is where, I told myself back then. I said, you know, if I ever get a second chance, to do something that gives me the passion and the buzz that playing football and baseball did, I'm not ever going to question that ever. And this is how I got into bodybuilding. The funny thing was, is an old buddy of my schoolmate, he hadn't seen me for a lot of years. And when I got on the dairy, Tim, I mean, I went from an athlete to a has-been. And all of a sudden, I was like in the worst shape of my life at 27 years old. And when he saw me, he said, "What the fuck happened to you?" So what do you mean? You know, so you don't notice that when you're looking at yourself every single day.
Right.
You know, I'm not too bad, you know, type of thing. Well, that kind of woke me up. I go, what do you mean? And he goes, well, you need to get into a gym or something. Well, here's the thing that was crazy back then. When I was playing football, because that's where I got a scholarship to go play down in Cal Poly. And back then, quarterbacks and receivers, they didn't want us in the weight room. This was like the specialty groups. They said, no. This is just for the linemen. Offensive. Believe it or not, it was like that. And in fact, they would have us go do something else, jump on a trampoline, anything but weightlift, you know, in those days. It was pretty amazing. And I guess to some degree, the fact that the coaches said that, they kind of were right in a way. Because, you know, if you don't do sports-specific and position-specific training, you could screw yourself up. So in that sense, I will give them kudos. But it's like when I left the game, it was like, and when my buddy said, because he was really into weightlifting and bodybuilding, but not to compete. And I said, well, hell, I don't know anything about weightlifting. We weren't allowed to do this crazy stuff. You know?
So you had never done it at all?
No, not even in high school, nowhere, because they didn't want us near the weight room like that. And they wanted us out on the field throwing the ball as a quarterback. You know, you and the receivers go out there and you do reps, you know, go run your routes and throw. So they were kind of right. But anyway, that guy, he woke my buddy is the reason that I got into weightlifting, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I don't know how you learn your weight training, but for me, it was about than looking in the muscle mags, because I had no clue, you know. And that's, this is when I became an avid, I all of a sudden I started, wait a minute, this feels pretty good to me. It's like, I'm learning this stuff. I built my own equipment on the dairy because I knew how to weld. That's what you learn, how to do stuff like that when you're on a dairy and a farm. I was a farm boy. Yeah, I made this equipment that was like prehistoric looking, you know, but because I was looking at it in the magazines. I didn't have time to go down to the local gym because I was too busy on the dairy.
Gotcha.
So, but I made time, and that was another life lesson. You know, when you really want to do something, you figure out a damn way.
Figure out how to do
it. Right? So I made this prehistoric equipment, and in 6 months, Tim, I outgrew my little home gym, and the bug bit me, man. I'm like, I'm starting to like the way. And I look, I mean, when I look back at that photo, you know, the 6 month photo, I mean, to now it looks like, oh my God. And I thought I was looking good back then, you know, but the point is that was the beginning of what got me on this path. And when it really bit me was when my current business partners to this day, we're at 25 years now, 30 years. I went to a gym. Then I did join a gym. He saw me training. He saw that I was intense. He goes, why don't you have a thing about competing? And I thought, oh my God, you know, I dropped classes if there was like any kind of an oral presentation, let alone put on Speedos in front of a bunch of people. I thought, there's no damn way.
Right. Right.
Well, it happened, and the rest is history. I got into this in a way that just, it took it to where I'm at today. It changed my whole livelihood. So, you know, when you got into you were coaching your kids, but when did you actually get into the weight training, and how did that cross over for you? How did you get started? How did you learn it?
Well, it where I really learned it, we did lift in high school. There wasn't much instruction, but there was, I grew up in Hawthorne, which is down the way from here, closer to LAX. And an old high school buddy of mine, I ran into him and I needed to start lifting. I was at El Camino still. And there wasn't, they really didn't have much of a weightlifting program back then. They do now, I think. And so I asked my buddy Wayne, I go, where are you working out, man? I need to get into a gym. And it was right like 3 blocks from my house. I mean, how cool is that? It was this old school gym, you know, had the smell, all that old gym smell, which makes it even better, right? Yeah. And there's this old guy, Bill, that owned it, and Wayne taught me how to lift. And then other guys that I find out are working out there that are in my circle of friends or whatever, they start teaching me. And that kind of gave me the bug. And you know, and then I think it closed, and then I went to, by the time I got to Pacific, I'm looking for somewhere to lift during the break, right? So somebody mentioned this place called Muscle Mill in Redondo Beach, and it was, I can't remember which brother, but I think it was Mike Mincer was running it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, and again, the smell, he had all this old stuff. I'm like, oh my God, I could smell it right now. And it was beautiful, you know, and there was that kind of motivation, and it got me to just do the football stuff. But then I get out of football. And as you said, man, you go through the withdrawal and the identity crisis and all that. And you found a new way to compete.
Yeah,
is what I'm hearing, right? Yep. Okay, I'm used to competing.
Yeah,
you know, and I've got this warrior in me, and I've got to put it somewhere. And that's where I was going through sort of an identity crisis. And then so we're working out here and there, and I'm kind of working out with my ex-wife at the time, and some like 24-hour place over by the airport, and you know, not too motivated about it, but we do it regularly. And, you know, I'm not going for giant gains, just in there to kind of exercise,
yeah,
and jump in a few aerobics classes and diet, yeah, you know, here and there. And then we get separated and we get, you know, get divorced. And I'm like, okay, I should get back to weightlifting, you know, back to my roots. Well, the one thing that I noticed when I was lifting that first time around was it was almost like I was lifting with the motivation, like I'm getting ready for football.
Yeah.
Next season. Yeah. And I had to deal with, no, you're not. How do I turn that off? And it's a weird plug that I had a hard time figuring out. And then the separation, divorce, and reading, probably, I don't know. I was trying to remember where I found you. It was probably in one of the magazines, nice old school copywritten, letter, sales letter thing. And it was phenomenal. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to get that. And I got it. And there was like a couple cool things about it. One was, it was that old school information product thing that we don't get so much anymore, where you open the box, it's like Christmas,
right?
Yeah. And it's, you got all this stuff, and it's kind of that direct marketing that you don't get anymore. And I was kind of in my early years of direct, marketing and doing that stuff. And so I was kind of like, whoa, cool. And I'm studying it, right? I want to learn the bodybuilding part, but I want to learn, you're a good marketer. I want to see what you're doing, right? So I wanted to give you props on that, because that was the other side of it, is I'm looking at, whoa. And so then I opened up the stuff and I started reading it, start doing it, start studying it. And it was transformational. All of a sudden, dudes are at work or saying, are you doing roids?
Yeah.
I'm like, no. Never done roids in my life. I didn't do it during football. Might have had a longer career if I did. Yeah. I'm kidding. Nobody heard that.
Right.
I think I was telling you at one time the Deepak Squally stuff came out, and I was all bought into that. I was doing the and that was the original keto. Everybody's on keto.
Well, I know.
That was the OG, man.
Yeah.
And so then I started doing the carb on the weekend and going on Monday, man. And I'm freaking like this and feeling, and I just start growing, and people are going, are you roiding? What's going on, bro? And so I'm, it's just building me up after getting my ass kicked in the situation I was in my life, and we just had a kid and the whole nine yards. And so I was just in a low spot, and the weightlifting helped me. And there's a part in one of the videos that you're working out with Platts. And it was cool, because you guys would comment in between all the sets and stuff. So it was kind of fun to hear the dialogue. And Platts goes, something like, through life's adversities, divorces, blah, 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 the iron will never let you down, right?
And that's just, like, class.
Yeah, that just stuck in my head, and sure as hell, it brought me back from the dead. And so I've always have loved that. And one of the things I wanted to share with you about that sort of marketing was that product, it stood on its own. Okay. And so much now, everybody's into these stair steps of buy this, which will make you need this, which is more expensive, which will make you need that, which is more expensive.
Yeah.
And so the way that I explain it is, so many gurus will create a frame and it's made so you can never get out of it. Whereas you, with your product, and what I like to do is, and I'll take clients as far down the rabbit hole as they want to go in digital marketing, which is my how I am able to afford coaching and not making money. And so I like the, how's the story go? You, to feed a, instead of giving a man a fish, teach him how to fish.
Oh yeah.
And that's what your product did, right? I don't ever need to see Leo Casa again. Right. I don't need to see your stuff again, but I want it because you've edified me so much through this product. So I ended up getting you sent a letter. This is, old school 95-ish or something. I get a letter and Leo sent me a letter. Right.
It's like that letter that you got from college, the one of those letters, right?
Yeah. Right. But you kind of know it's a sales pitch, but he signed it, and you're like, cool, man. So you're reading it and it's like, this whole thing about the high fat diet or
anabolic diet.
Anabolic diet. Thank you. And oh, okay, I'll check that out. And I remember my dad was on Atkins. Kind of sounds like Atkins. Okay, yeah. I'll, you know, poo-poo. And the marketing's on fleek, as they say, and just everything's perfect. So, great, get it, get the video, get the thing I think you did in Marina Del Rey.
Right.
Yeah. A little seminar, and I think I still have those to this day if I can.
Oh, man.
Now I got to buy a video player so I can watch it.
Oh yeah,
but you know what I mean. And then then I got the newsletters. You know, I got a folder still in the bookshelf of newsletters that I would get every month, and you know, and the tips and all this kind of stuff. And that's what got me. You know, I think I told you before. You know, I did it. I bought it to get a chick. Right. Yeah. When we talked on the phone, I bought it. So, you know, no longer am I weightlifting for football. I'm weightlifting for chicks.
Right on.
Right. And it worked, and, you know, going on our 23rd year right now, you know, and two children who are adults now. And so I've always have looked back on that though, man, it was. So this time around, I had not lifted for a long time. And then there's a gym here in Torrance. Oh gosh, I can't remember. It's I can't remember the name, but it's Dave Fisher, an old bodybuilder.
Oh, I know who he is.
He runs it, and he's been he's just a sweetheart of a guy, and helpful. And I, when my son was training, he would say, well, why don't you would interject. He was so cool that I let him, hey, whatever, you're coach. You know, I'm just the coachable kid.
Yeah.
I'm with my kid, right? I mean, when you're a player, you're coachable.
Yeah.
And so many people aren't coachable in life. They need, when you're, I'm around a master, I'm around you, I'm around him. Teach me, you know, a shitload more than I know, because this is your craft. So I had asked him a question one time, I don't remember what it was, and I wanted to kind of motivate my son, and he was cool. And I saw that he was wanting to help. And so he eventually would just, you know, jump right in when we're doing stuff and help. And so that's where I went. And then that was during the period where I wasn't coaching. I was just being an administrator. I was the president of that old league. And then when I went to the school, I ended the membership because it was stupid at that point.
I want to go back to something because I need to give kudos where kudos is due. I'm sure you being in the industry, well, I would imagine you've heard of Jay Abraham.
Of course.
Of course you have.
Of course. His office is right here in Torrance.
Of course. Is it still there?
I believe it is. Yeah, I believe it is.
I talked to Jay's his executive in Florida because I was almost ready to do something again with Jay again. But the reason why I'm bringing that up is because that letter that you got was constructed by Jay Abraham. And I don't know if you know the story, but how we ended up with him was my partner, Dr. Horine, is him and I. So I come back from Bulgaria with this information. And I told Russ, I said, because it was a long shot. We went there and I was one of 26 people, blah, blah, blah. We talked about it in our marketing. And so when I got back, I told Russ, I said, look, these guys, even though they're Olympic lifters, they have all this knowledge as far as muscle growth and all that. There's a reason why they didn't go into bodybuilding. It was Olympic lifting was a lot more popular back then,
at least in
that area. So we thought, well, we'll do a bodybuilding thing. We came up with this Bulgarian Burst. That was our first one. And we thought, we need to find the best damn marketing guru in the industry. Well, Jay Abraham was like, at that time, he probably still is, gold standard. And I'll tell you what, you talk about big pain in the ass. My partner, Russ, and I became a big pain in the ass for Jay because we wouldn't leave him alone. To the point, he just said, you know, fuck it, come up here or come down here. I just want to get you guys out of my hair. We just wouldn't let off. We said, we have something here. So we go to Jay. And we sat down with him, and you know what, Tim, he said, after listening to us, he could see that we were both passionate about what we were talking about. He goes, so here's how it goes. And this is on a weekend. We were down there on a Saturday. He goes, I'm going to do it. And he goes, I'm busy. And part of what the way he was coming up to us is part of his marketing too. He was almost pushing us away. Sure. You know, I'm really busy, blah, 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 blah. But we're going to go ahead and do this with you. Because you're so passionate, And we were. And he said, so what I need you to do is, if you want to do this, we're going to go ahead and I need $15,000 on Monday. And I'll write you a 16-page direct mail marketing piece. That's how we got started. My partner and I, we didn't have that kind of money, but we had credit cards. That's how we started our company.
And they've done that.
Yeah, we took cash advances on every one of our damn cards, you know, and that's how we got that business started. But that letter that you got, I guess, is, you know, I can't tell any story that's short. It's long. I'm long-winded. Is that came from Jay. That was a Jay deal, man.
I wish I still had, I might somewhere stuffed somewhere. I kept that letter forever.
Well, and the thing about that, of course, we know nothing. We thought, how in the hell is somebody, I think it may have been an 18 page. It was either 16 or 18 page direct long copy, long style copy ad.
Old school.
Old school. It's like, how in the hell? We got so many people that when we told them that, they go, nobody's going to read 18 or 16.
Not going to work, right?
Not going to work. 900,000 copies later, I beg to differ.
Really? 900,000?
Yeah, because what happened was when he wrote this thing for us, I mean, he says, you're going to know if you've got a viable product within about 2 weeks.
Right away, yeah.
You know, right away. And that's a good and bad thing, because you're also going to know if you miserably fail. But, you know, so we just tested the market. This is some of the stuff that you know about.
Yeah.
And the good news was is that the initial test, we got a really strong return. But now, man, we just created a monster, because now we had to go out to bigger lists. So do you remember Gary Halbert?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we had to sell our product to Gary Halbert to get a bigger presence in the industry. We just didn't have, we couldn't keep up with the demand, believe it or not.
Right.
You know, the cost and everything. And not too many people know this story, but we actually, for 1 year, we sold the Bulgarian Burst. We worked and got a percentage off sales for 1 year. We made enough money off that to buy our product completely back, and then the rest was history. That's how we got into the industry. And we just, you know, it's like, we couldn't even believe this, what was going on. But at the same time, it was a catch 22. It's like, oh shit, we have to, like, the game kept getting bigger, and we didn't have enough, you know, momentum going at that time to be able to keep up with that. We had to use Gary.
But the thing is, if you never press Jay,
it doesn't happen.
You're just another bodybuilder.
So that story, the moral of that story is to be persistent. When you believe in something and you have that passion, because I think sometimes, and maybe this is getting a little off track here, but it's about following a dream. It's about being passionate about something and having enough confidence and determination to follow through on a dream. And I can't tell you, I think that too many people don't do that. And that's what I didn't do in the very beginning when I said, oh, you know, maybe it's just, you know, maybe it's just my time to lay the old cleats up. Well, right. You know, you never know how stuff is going to work out, but that's going back to that promise.
That's the advice I give kids is look, I mean, you're either in or out. It's pretty binary. And if you're not in, then get out, but don't sell yourself short at the same time. And I think that, and yours is a great story, you know, and people do quit too much. And what I've learned as being a coach in football is adversity is part of this.
Yep.
In sales, they go, no, 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 it's normal. But if you look at it in maybe a broader scope and generalize it, it's just, you know, if you want something to happen that's never been done before, you're going to get resistance. Crap. I mean, just, it's going to happen.
Yep.
Because nobody wants to freaking change.
Yep.
I like it this way, but this is better. Yeah. Okay. Fine. But I like it this way. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. We just canceled a friend of ours just recently, went over to see her. She's really, really stuck in life. And doesn't want to change, though.
Yeah.
Miserable, right? How many people do we know? Are you hear about the battered woman, but she won't leave.
Yeah.
You know, and but it's better. Just outside this door is better. And we're right fucking there, man.
Yeah.
And we don't press. and you guys trust, and that, you know, that's the big diff. And that's how many people have good ideas in your industry, but never press.
Well, and the thing about that is what you have to be willing to deal with is rejection and failure. You have to see failure in a different light. You know, it's more, and it's hard to do. It's easier said than done. I mean, when you, you know, look, I would have never learned most of this stuff if I hadn't failed enough before it actually happened.
Yeah.
And here's the beauty of all this. You know, I don't like failing any more today than I did before, but I see it in a different perspective. And I understand that's part of the process. And too many people are afraid of that. And I understand that. I really do. But here's where I think the deal break is. If you have passion, and this is my lesson that I learned, because ever since when that bug bit me and when I did my first show in bodybuilding, I was insane with passion. And I knew, and I went back to my wife. I understand in part why she thought I was a fucking maniac. And, you know, when I said, oh, by the way, you know, I'm going to become a personal trainer in a town that had no personal training at the time. She said, what the fuck? I mean, you got two kids.
I'm going to be the dairy farmer bodybuilder trainer.
Oh, my God. You know, and the thing about that, Tim, I really couldn't even relate, because I was in a spot where I felt so much fucking pain from quitting on myself in a sport. And who knows how far I would have gone. But that's not the point. The point is I quit on myself before I really could say I did all I could do. I walked away. That's different. But I
that would be in your control, whereas you kind of let you feel.
I used like, an excuse.
Yeah, that was an excuse.
Right, and that haunted me in a way that I can't tell you. It was painful, and then so when that all of a sudden, and I thought, well, realistically, this is before bodybuilding that bug bit me. I'm thinking, you know, what will I do that will give me that kind of juice unless I'm back into a sport? This is the reason why I thought maybe coaching would ease that pain. And I knew there wasn't enough there for me.
Dude, you know? I've met, self-included, so many coaches that are pained, that are injured, like what you said. I thought it would fix it. And they go into the sport and they never fix it. They never fix their inner self. And so they're just passing on their shit onto these kids. And when I counsel coaches, or if I'm asked by somebody, or if I have one-on-one, I'll always say, fix your own shit so that you, because I'll ask them, you know, I kind of get philosophical if you can't tell, but I'll say, are you worthy of those kids? You know, you're supposed to be the mentor, and you're passing on your own crap.
Yeah.
And so that's where I turned it into where it was a bigger purpose, a bigger something to be passionate about. And I figured out that, okay, I can give back to the stuff that I've been given and more. Because I understand the psychology of it. I understand I've gone through my own pain, my own hell. I've walked through the hell. And now you're saying, I hate rejection. I hate losing. Now I revel in it. I look back at my example back in the September or whatever it was, October. And, you know, I mean, I had two parents assault me. Okay. And I had stuff with the school that was just a bummer. They didn't back me up, and you know, it ended up being where I was told to do something, and because of not having the support, I told them I'm done, and it ended up quit or fired, however you want to wax it. But
yeah,
I'm 20 times a better man that right now, having gone through that process. I've forgiven everybody. I'm a Catholic kid. So I'm supposed to forgive. So I forgive the kids. I forgive everybody, you know, even the guy that wanted to put me on the ground.
Yeah.
And I've translated that into, okay, how is that on my journey? Where am I, you know? And so I kind of liken it to, you know, if you've ever gotten into the mythology stuff, and Joseph Campbell, and so a lot of marketers use this, and the reluctant hero, and you know, and I'm like, you know what? I was a hero, and I was going to go in there and save everybody. And I did what I can do. And Superman has to fly in and then, you know, drop Lois Lane down on the ground and say, good luck, ma'am, and be gone. But Superman gets into trouble when he hangs out and he's Clark Kent and he's kind of getting woo-wooed by Lois. And now, you know, now that's when his frailty starts showing up and he gets into trouble. The bad guy, you know, starts taking advantage of him. So I really believe that, you know, I mean, I don't know if I'll ever coach again. I just let it go where it's going to go. But I look at these lessons in life of my story. My path is, okay, how do I, a lot of people are stuck in their story. The person that I told you we were going to help, we're going in as Superman, right? My wife and I, another friend, and we're going to help her. If she wants to help herself, great. We gave the help. And you know what? You're stuck in your story. There's a better story. But I also know that my story is not the best story. I know it works for me and it probably works better than for her. But I'm also not going to be so arrogant as to think mine's the best. And so that's where I was going into the marketing thing. And I want to bring it back to, you have these gurus that'll put you in this box or this frame, and you see only their way of seeing things, and you don't ever grow so that you can go off and have your own story.
That's a trap. That there's no question you can get trapped. That's for sure. You know, but here's, and again, going back to what I was telling you, once I did that competition and I knew I would have really let myself down twice if I didn't jump on that, because I promised myself that I would just jump. I would figure out the details. And, you know, that's a hard thing to trust. And I read a lot of motivational, you know, people, they say, don't worry about that kind of stuff. I'm thinking, man, you got to be crazy when you're trying to pay bills and all that kind of stuff. But there was something that was deeper, and I wasn't going to let myself down again. And I have to tell you something, it all turned out. I went in and I sort of started the personal training business, and I did whatever I had to do. I was a short order cook. I just did whatever I had to do to keep growing and making it a business. And, you know, and I told my kids when they graduated college, because ever since I made that choice 38 years ago, Tim, I've never worked a day in my life, and I've been working my ass off ever since then. Yes. Do you know what I'm saying? Because it's just it's a different ball game. I love getting up today more than I did, because I appreciate it on another level now, being at my age and going through that whole process. I see it and I enjoy it more. When I came back out of retirement to do bodybuilding again at the age of 56, I had way more fun. And I had a great time when I was in the moment, but I had way more fun because it changed the perspective. It's like, I got another shot to do this. And I tell you what, man, what that did for me was, when my kids graduated from college, because when I got into personal training, no one was doing it. And they were saying, is this a real job? Aren't you just nothing more than an aerobics instructor? I mean, yeah. I was getting hammered even by my wife. I mean, she'd go, why don't you just be normal and have a normal job? You know, and I don't blame her. That's my first one. I don't blame her for thinking that way. I can understand how she might. Now that I'm looking back at it, it's like, okay, I understand why you're all freaked out, because we had two kids. And it's like, the hell you mean you're going to go out here and be a personal trainer? So it works out. And look, there's always going to be ups and downs, no matter what you do. But when you're doing something you're passionate about, those obstacles look different. They look different to me.
Yes.
Right? I told my kids on that day when they graduated, I said, look, the most important thing, and I made a lot of mistakes along the way as a parent, as a husband more, as a parent, I think I was a pretty damn good parent. But you know something, I told my kids, I said, you do in life what means the most to you. Have passion for what you do, no matter what the hell it is.
Yep.
If it's juggling, you know, whatever it is, if you have passion for that, you'll be surprised how shit works out. And all I can say is I've had that experience. And Tim, along the way, it's like all of a sudden when you start seeing, you know, you're kind of following your dream and not somebody else's, and it kind of works out, you start trusting that instinct. And I think that this gets beat out of us a lot of times from parents, from teachers. I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just
everything.
A lot of stuff. It kills that spirit. And I am so fucking lucky at the age of 65. We were joking on, you know, how are you doing? I'm going to tell you something. I'm doing fucking great. You know, and I had some shit happen to me. We all do. We all have our story. I don't feel sorry for myself. I had 3 strokes in 3 weeks, eight years ago that paralyzed me, that almost took me the fuck out. But if it wasn't for all the shit that I came through being an athlete, bodybuilding saved my life. And it's all the things that I got to do, man. I got to travel the world. How lucky am I?
You aren't you without all that shit.
No. And I'm so lucky. And, you know, now I'm back in the industry again. This is how you and I are hooking up now. It's like I was out of it for 13 years of writing training courses, you know. And I don't know, I started reading Google and I started getting all fired up about some of these, I call them social media trainers that, you know, I can tell they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground. And I thought, well, wait a minute, you know, how am I going to be relative now at this age? And it was using my knowledge. And now you're at an age where you're using yours to pass it forward. And I'm back in, and I got to tell you something, man, I'm back in bigger than I was back then. And I'm not going to get into bodybuilding and do that. But I'm now that guy that wants to, I want to keep teaching and training like I've been doing all my life. And Tim, I'm having a ball doing it. You can't keep me down.
That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And I, instead, guys that are 65 or, you know, they're settling down. They're, oh, I'm going to just kind of relax and kind of slowly die. And I'm like, no, hell no, man. I told my wife the other day, I said, you know, I'm either going to die in front of a computer doing my marketing, or I'm going to die on the football field.
Yeah.
At some point, you know, and I'm going to go all the way till I exhaust, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that what else? I mean, I think that's part of what you grew up with. And was it because of football, or was it just in you already where you had that competitor thing? And then, you know, at the end, you're going, oh, crap, you know, I sold myself out. I should have kept going.
Yeah.
Is that Leo? Is that your spirit, or is it football, or born of football, or was it both? You know, that's my big question, is where did this shit all come from that makes some guys, you know, just push and push and push forever, and other guys not?
Yeah, no, I'm really fortunate. I'm, you know, and anyway, getting off on a little tangent there. So tell me a little bit about you're into the Google digital marketing. Is that what you're doing?
That Google thing that, yeah.
Yeah, that Google.
Yeah, so back in, I like the joke, back after I'd gone through the divorce, I'm remarried, and I'm actually in, at that point, I had a real estate background for a while out of school, and then after divorcing and remarrying, I'm working as a headhunter, basically, you know, helping people get jobs, which is a phenomenal business. And if not for the internet, I would still be on it. I mean, it's just a cash cow. Everybody needs the work, right? And so, but meanwhile, my buddy, the guy who introduced me to my wife, is working on this new internet thing. You know, what are you doing? And he goes, well, there's no Google. It's like Alta Vista and InfoSeek and all these old search engines. And he's, yeah, well, I get this sports site. Wait, well, you have a sports site? Yeah, I found these guys and I'm told them I could do this, and you know, and they said fine, and I do all this InfoSeek and Alta Vista and Yahoo, and I get the sports site to come up in their search engines at the top. I'm like, you could do that? And so I was hooked, right? So I went to my owner of the company I was working with, and I said, I could do all this. You know, I couldn't do it. I just said I could
fake it till you make it,
but I'll fake it. So I did it, and I called on my buddy often, and he kind of coached me, and you know, the rest is history. In that, he was from the sales and marketing background also, but he took a job somewhere down near San Diego that he couldn't refuse. It was so sweet, and he goes, I told these guys to hire you, and I'm like, you're shitting me. I don't know what to do. He goes, oh, I'll help you. He never helped me. I couldn't get him on the phone that entire time. But it was sweet. I worked on, you know, Teddy Bruschi, Eric Dickerson's website.
Wow.
He was an old, you know, sports site, and Lomas Brown, who's in the Hall of Fame. And so it was really fun, and it was kind of an insert into not just SEO, which is what I do, but also into e-commerce, into sourcing. I started helping them source their products. They were overpaying on everything. And so I was like the original, if you know what Alibaba is, I was the original. Before there was that, there was other ways around to find good deals overseas, and I helped them to drop ship and stuff. And so that was that. And then next thing I know, my old real estate partner was wondering, what are you doing on the internet? And I told him. And so we built a real estate website together, and it blew up nationally. It was the number one for sale by owner site in the world, probably. And until all the guys with heavy funding came along, and I have a feeling they did some nasty cutting me off at the knees kind of stuff, and basically killed my server. And at the time I really didn't know what to do about it. You know, I was still learning as you go kind of thing. That's how I got into that. Now I kind of do it all, but I'm depending on if you're coming from the real estate world, you probably know me from as an SEO guy. If you're coming from other ventures, it might be social media guy or whatever, but it's, to me, it's all the damn same. Get somebody to pick up the phone and call.
Well, I tell you what, I've dealt in the social media, you know, part of this, and I have to tell you, I've tried different things, and you guys that make this stuff sizzle, that's really something. For me, it's just like I've tried it. It's just not in my wheelhouse, you know, and that I kind of learned that I'm going to stay in my wheelhouse and get guys like you who know what the hell you're doing. Because, you know, it's just like when that person says, what's so fucking hard about weightlifting and, you know, getting your body ready? There's just a lot more to it than meets the eye. And
I know this, you're in your marketing. And I knew when I talked to you the first time that you're authentic. And whenever I talk to guys, you know, our age or a little younger, I say, man, you hear this word influencer on social media.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, bullshit. We're the original OG influencers.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, come on. You can sell better than most people in today, you know, that are out on those things. I could sell better than most of these guys. And it's so we need to be out there, and we need to be putting ourselves out there. And I've followed you, you know, since you got onto Instagram, and now you do, I believe you probably have yourself on a daily schedule where you're going to do your story, right? And that seems to me that that's your regular thing. And I applaud that. You know, it's just, that's what people need to do to build their persona and to have something to reference. And I've been creating content for so long, since the early 2000s, you know, I was one of the original SEOs. I was one of the original bloggers, you know, Facebook, Twitter. And you know, and as the world splintered into social media, I had a hard time figuring out how does it all fit together. I mean, how do you build an audience? And so I started getting interested in stuff like what you're doing right now, which is to build your audience up, create a following, and do a hell of a job doing it. So I applaud you. You figured it out. A lot of people I watch are not figuring it out. You know, they're not seeing the big picture.
Well, it comes back to, I think in some way it comes back to, it's just like learning how to bodybuild and learning how to grow muscle. There's a process. You have to be willing to go through that, and most people don't. But the ones that do, and this is part of the reason why I wanted you on my show, because, you know, I'm a pretty fast study when it comes to knowing somebody, you know. And when I was Kazuntite, when I was in my gym, you know, when I do consultations with people, I learned a lot about nonverbal communication. I was a quick study on that because I knew that was going to impact me on my being successful or not. So when we hooked up through this Instagram, you know, I'm not just interviewing just anybody. I'm interviewing people that, and you gave me I really appreciate the fact that you think I'm authentic, because I try to be. We always have tried to be, talk straight, and sometimes it's kind of popular, but whatever, doesn't matter. And I'm searching out, because I think that guys like you and guys like me in the industry are good for the industry, where the counterbalance to all this bullshit, I call it SOS, shiny object syndrome. that comes through. And so I really wanted to have you on my podcast because, you know, I felt you. I get you. And I want the people that are listening to know, you know, your side of it, because I think you're the real deal and you can help a lot of people out, you know.
Thank you very much.
But anyway, listen, we're going to wrap this thing up, but I just have to tell you, the one, anybody that's an old serious grocer, because that's kind of my gig now, is, are you a true serious grocer? You know, I don't know if you heard my latest one, but I'm talking about the Serious Growth Training Creed. We have this creed and it's 6 components, and I won't give them out to you because I want you to maybe go on my and check it out. But there's 6 components that a true serious grocer has. You know, are you one of those people? And I don't know, man, I think you're one of those guys. And when I heard that you were from the old days, I have to talk to you people. Every one of the people that's been on Serious Growth or Big or one of those, I call them because I want to thank you for being such a great supporter. It means a lot to me.
That's the authenticity. I mean,
and I need to talk to you and just say thanks a lot. And, you know, let's talk about now. The podcast was my way back into the industry for me to get this off my chest before I explode. You remember that newsletter when it's that direct mail piece? I have to get this off my chest before I explode.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yes.
Okay. The podcasting is that, Tim, this allows me to explode here and to air shit out and talk with amazing people. So this is my way back. And you're one of those guys I had a call and talked to. I'm glad you did, because you're an interesting guy, and I want to talk to you more off camera about, you know, some stuff. Meanwhile, is there anything that you'd like to push on the show, like anything that you're doing or where people can go find you and your services?
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. Just to tag on what you said, one of the things you have to explode is I think when, you know, everybody who's a business person, in any way, I don't care if it's one of my kids who are just starting out in the business world, or if it's somebody our age who's been around or older, you're in the business, you're in that business because you have some sort of knowledge, right? And people want to hear it. If somebody has called you today and asked you a question, or you're at the gym and you've been asked the question, I call that a frequently asked question. Right. After a while, you've been in the business, the same damn questions keep coming up, but you kind of answer it a little better than the last time, or you put a little flavor on it. It's in a different context.
Yeah.
I believe we have an obligation to share that. Right. And I'm not saying give away the wheelhouse or give away the store. I'm saying, but you know, if you answered a client or certainly a prospect and you kind of made their world a little bit better today, well, why don't you put that out there? That's what you're doing. I mean, you're drawing on years of experience and years. And I know people that do that. I know a realtor in Virginia that I interviewed last year, and that's what he does.
Yeah.
He has a phone right there, and team member comes in, asks a question, he goes on there and he it's okay, thanks. You know, that's his content. So whether how sophisticated you are, if you're watching and you want to get into the digital marketing that's out there and be authentic, then the easiest way is let your prospects build your content. And when you've been around it as long as Leo has or I have, you're just drawn on all kinds of stuff. But originally it came from a want in the marketplace, and we had to figure out ways to answer that. So I know where I'm going long, and I'm like you, I'm a talker, so I'll shut up now. But you can get a hold of me through my website, spidergeesttechnologies.com. And
can you repeat that again for me, please?
Spidergeesttechnologies.com.
Oh, okay. All right.
And some people think it's a great name. Some people think it's crazy. I get calls every once in a while for juice. I don't know who wants spiders juice.
But it made me ask a second time. It worked.
Well, I get right. But I was a little bit too cute in the beginning, because a spider is what crawls a website, and you want to juice it, electrify it, or mash it, whichever, you know, the double meaning. Technologies. And and so that was the idea, and I stuck with it. So here we are.
I like it. Here we are.
Later or whatever it's been.
Yeah. Anyway, listen, man, I really, you know, you have no idea. I really appreciate you coming on and doing the show. I learned a lot today. I had a great time. That's I still want to have a great time when I'm doing stuff.
Absolutely.
And I had a really good time, and it was fun interviewing you. Maybe our paths will cross again. I mean, I'm down in LA and quite a bit. It. And one of these days, I'll give you a heads up when I'm down there, and we can shoot the shit or something.
Can I leave a tip?
Yeah. Okay,
how I did met you. I just to give you an idea, on Thursday, I had a guy meet me like that. He said, hey, I'm looking at you. We're in a Facebook group. One of my skill stacks is hypnosis, NLP, that stuff. And you're saying body language. You're kind mm-hmm. of all probably in the same interest.
Yep.
And so I hung out all day. I think it was on Thursday last week with Adam. We met because he reached out to me through Facebook, and I'd never talked to him before. I met with the guy on Sunday, who is a Super Bowl champion from 85 Bears. And I met him by reaching out to him on Facebook. It wasn't mm-hmm. so that I could use him or whatever. I had no idea that we were going to be on a podcast. I just said, hey man, love your stuff. It wasn't, there was no schmoozing, because there's people teaching, go into DMs and schmooze with people, and it comes off inauthentic,
right,
and not real. But you know, shit, if we never talked again, the praise is real. It's for real that this book has colored my life ever since I read it and practiced it, most importantly. So if any, you learn anything from me as far as social media today, go out and make friends. That's why they call it social.
Nice.
Well, I'd love to meet you. You're down this way. I'd love to meet you. And if I ever get up your way, I'll definitely.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a call after the show and talk over a few things, man. But in the meantime, like I, in my little post that I do. Okay. Until next time, go get serious growth. All right, man. You take care.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye now.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.